Hello to all my fellow 101 History Podcast listeners out there. It's great to be back on the air with you guys. I know I was on the air last, probably about 4 days ago, although it seems like it's been a little bit longer. But as I've said before, and I'll say here again, that life doesn't always revolve around podcasting, but that's not a bad thing either, too. But one thing I do know is that even when I'm not on the air, I'm always making it a priority to read about other things from a historical perspective that do interest me, whether it's War of 1812 history, maritime history, anything that that I find not just so much interesting, but perhaps something that could lead down the road to a future podcast, book topic, series, discussion. As a matter of fact, something tells me that after we're done with this series, that the book that I'm currently reading could very well be the next book I choose to do for the future podcast book topic series. Let's keep our fingers crossed, but I don't see why it wouldn't be the case. Well, I know when I was on the air last, we talked about Nathan Hale's Last Day Alive. I can't imagine being in Nathan Hale's shoes, knowing that here I am, you know, facing the most, facing a decision, not so much, a decision, but an outcome that I don't have control over. Even those whom were below General William Howe, most notably Captain John Montressor, whom had befriended Nathan Hale. Matter of fact, took an interest in his drawings. Not just so much an interest in his drawings, but simply had befriended him leading up to his execution. Of course, John Montressor obviously witnessed it happen. But I think there's a lot of emotions riding high throughout this greater conflict, not only from the continental side, but even from the British side, when someone from the opposing side is taken in as a prisoner, and in this case being Nathan Hale, only to be executed, that is, death by hanging, and to see the reaction of those in the crowd as spectators. We learned that many of women in the crowd sobbed over the fact that this fella was executed. Even if they didn't know him, just watching him get executed was painful enough. Yes, there was a message, and that Robert Rogers, along with the rest of the British Army, or the British military alone, were not going to tolerate the presence of rebel spies in their confines. But that spying alone was something that was frowned upon, and obviously for the British, their motto is the following, that if you spy, you must die. So, yes, it was one thing for Nathan Hale to be caught in the act of spying, but to watch him be executed, and here you are as a bystander, you have to wonder, okay, yes, they're needs to be some kind of punishment doled out. It's one thing to ridicule the opposition for spying. Now all of a sudden to watch him get hung, and all of a sudden it does take a sudden emotion, a change in emotions for some people, maybe not all. So, you know, it's one thing to have your loyalties on one side, but then all of a sudden when you're witnessing someone from the other side be executed, then you have to wonder, do loyalties really mean anything? And I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, okay, let's say John and Sally Smith's son fought in the war. Let's say John and Sally Smith's son performed the same kind of secret mission that Nathan Hale undertook, only to get caught. And then let's say one of the spectators whom witnessed John and Sally Smith's son be executed, say, Tom Jones. Tom Jones and his wife watched the execution of Sally and John Smith's son. I think it would have a tremendous impact on the Joneses. Even if they are, say, pro-British, but still, if it really means enough to them to see what the impact of an execution can have, not just for the side that you're on, but perhaps for the other side, then you have to ask yourself, where do loyalties really mean anything? In other words, Nathan Hale's death, yes, it's a travesty, not just so much for the Continental Army, but also, how is the Continental Army going to go forward? I mean, yes, they are still in the thick of the fight, but we should keep in mind that this is the sacrifice that Nathan Hale was willing to make, especially when he said that I regret that I only have but one life to lose for my country. Well, in this podcast segment episode to Nathan Hale, The Life and Death of America's First Spy, we're going to learn about what his brother Enoch does. In other words, Enoch is on a mission for the truth. He is going to, his journey for the truth is going to take him in all different directions, not just from talking to other family members, or I should say relatives, but also going into places where most of us might not have possibly foreseen him going. But Enoch is going to have to not only play the role of a family member searching for the truth, but he is also going to have to take on the role as his own private investigator. So here we go, folks, with the lead-off to this segment episode to Nathan Hale, The Life and Death of America's First Spy by M. William Phelps. So here we go with our first lead-off question. Prior to September 22nd of 1776, the day of Nathan's passing, when had been the last time a Hale family member wrote directly to Nathan? Just so happens it was August the 15th, 5 weeks and 3 days until Nathan had passed away. Enoch, Nathan's brother, had written a letter only to have it be given to a relative, or I should say in this case a cousin, whom joined the militia in going southward to New York for the New York campaign. Now, before September 22nd, Nathan had written to Enoch, advising him of what took place on the battlefields. September 30th of 1776, Enoch, along with the rest of the Hale family, came to a stark realization that Nathan could more than likely be in some kind of trouble, considering that no one had heard from him in over a month. And yes, it is fair to say that Nathan was very good at keeping in touch with his family in terms of giving them the most recent up-to-date information on what was going on in the war, but as we learned from a previous podcast segment episode, that once Nathan was a part of Knowlton's Rangers, communication became a little bit more limited. In other words, Nathan couldn't tell his family about the group he was with. Remember, folks, Knowlton's Rangers might as well have been the equivalent of what we know today in today's time as the modern-day Green Berets. In other words, Knowlton's Rangers was an organization that conducted top secret missions, like the one that Nathan engaged in that, you know, sadly took his life. But before September 22nd, Nathan had written to Enoch. Well, I've already mentioned that, pardon me, but yes, by the very end of September, of September 30th of 1776, that yes, Enoch and the rest of the Hale family has come to this stark realization that Nathan could be in trouble, considering that they haven't heard from him in over a month. What I do know, based upon what I read in the book and leading up to preparation for this podcast segment discussion, that multiple people from Coventry, where the Hale family lived, whom were returning from New Haven as well as along the New York border, admitted, or I should say, revealed hearing stories of Nathan's downfall. Well, you know, when someone experiences a downfall, that could mean a variety of things. Of course, when I think of downfall from a political perspective, usually we think of, you know, scandals. But I think it'd be fair to say that this is not a scandal here, folks. To me, a downfall in this case, when we haven't heard from a loved one in over a month, to me, it means that they are more than likely missing, given that we have not heard from them. And of course, you have to remember, folks, you know, back then there's no such things as telephones, texts, emails. So when we get a letter from a loved one, you know, that's a big deal. But at the same time, who's to say that by the time we receive the letter from a loved one, are they still alive? So, you know, yes, receiving letters in 18th century time was a big deal, considering that that was really the only primary method of communication if you did not see people directly. So, nobody knows for sure what exactly has taken place, but many were led to wonder if Nathan had indeed died. Okay, if he had indeed died, the big question is, how did he die? If somebody were to ask me this right now, given that we're just at the 101 phase of this of the greater concerns, knowing that we haven't heard from a family member in just over 5 weeks now, we haven't heard from him. We have three options to consider. Number one, Nathan could have perhaps died on the battlefield. Number two, Nathan could have died from a disease. Isn't it fair to say that Nathan wasn't feeling his best going into this top secret mission? Yes. And number three, this is the one that most people would not want to consider, but it is something that, you know, we would have to consider. Is it fair to say that there is a possibility that Nathan could have been taken as a prisoner of war or perhaps captured by the enemy? It's possible. So if you reside in the Coventry, the town of Coventry, these are the three theories that you are going to be coming up with. But at the same time, the first two are going to be your best choices, because even if one dies on a battlefield, if I had to choose between dying on a battlefield versus being taken as a prisoner of war or being captured by the enemy as a result of going behind enemy lines, I think I would have rather taken dying on a battlefield. That's just my opinion, but that's what I would prefer over being a prisoner of war. But we must be reminded that not everybody got to choose the outcomes and how they died during this time. Given Enoch had stayed at home by turning down a role in the Revolutionary War, what career did he embark upon? Theology. Church minister. Enoch was very devoted to his brother Nathan. And from what I read in this book, it's very true. He was devoted to his brother. September 30th of 1776, the first step that Enoch takes towards his own independent investigation is by making his way to Reverend Joseph Strong's farm in Salmon Brook. Joseph Strong is the brother to Enoch's biological mother, whom died at a very young age. Enoch was very close to Uncle Joseph. Joseph Strong, besides being a minister to his own church, he was also he served the role as chaplain to several soldiers, and he was very well liked by his congregation. Enoch, the primary reason for going to Reverend Joseph Strong's home was to obtain information about Nathan. Well, this is what Reverend Strong was able to tell Enoch. Reverend Strong confirmed that he had split time in between his church to ministering troops along the front lines. The Hale family last knew that Nathan was leaving Long Island with regiment and going into the city, being Brooklyn Heights. At this point in time, you know, Enoch is very confused about Nathan's whereabouts and what he was up to leading up to his death. Yes, Nathan did write a letter to Enoch before he departed, but at the same time, it had nothing to do with mentioning about Knowlton's Rangers, and as we all know why, that was what we would think of in today's time as classified information that could not be shared with anyone outside of the outside of Knowlton's Rangers in 1776, but in today's time, we would say that the information could not be shared with anybody outside of the government. And of course, or even with those within the government whom are not entitled to be told of top secret information. Just because you work in the government, it doesn't mean that you can go around and tell everyone whatever it is you feel that you can share with them, even if it's classified information. Moving on here to our next question. While visiting his uncle Joseph, did Enoch come to a grim realization that perhaps Nathan himself might have been captured and hung as a spy? Yes, he did, folks. And this was attributed to the fact that he had heard a rumor in Coventry that perhaps some persons or some individuals claimed hearing of Nathan's capture by his getting taken as a spy. Now all of a sudden, before going to Salmon Brook to visit with Reverend Joseph Strong, his uncle, that there were a few people in Coventry that speculated that perhaps Nathan could have been taken, let me rephrase this. Perhaps it is fair to say that Enoch might have overheard some individuals in Coventry claiming or wondering if in fact Nathan had been captured by the enemy behind enemy lines. Of course, it's all speculation, but it's fair to say that some of these people not only knew the Hale family, but they knew, Nathan well. They knew just how dedicated of a person he was, regardless of what objectives he pursued, not just from a militaristic standpoint, but from anything else he has taken on. And it's fair to say that we can, you know, we should all agree with that, given that he was very dedicated, not only as a student at college at Yale, but also by being a schoolmaster per the schools that he taught at. Now, September 30th being the first realization for Enoch, as he now is starting to believe that Nathan could have, in fact, been caught and hung by the enemy, given many people in Coventry still were willing to cling on to the belief or theory that he had died on the battlefield. Yes, even if I didn't live in Coventry, but say lived in the next town or two over from where the Hales lived and still knew whom the Hale family was, I would still want to hold out for the belief that Nathan had died on a battlefield. It's what we all want to believe, but I'm going to say it here now, and I'll have to say it here again, that as much as we want to believe sometimes that so-and-so died this way and not the opposite way, sometimes we do have to come to a grim realization that as strong as our intentions may be, it's not always the way, it's not always the outcome we get. There's a lot of emotions riding here at stake, because it's one thing to get the news, but the other thing is, okay, it's one thing to get the news, it's how you're going to react to it. And how are you going to keep your emotions in check when you do receive the news? And of course, I can admit that, you know, yes, when we get news that isn't sometimes to our liking or accord, then yes, it is going to be hard to keep our emotions in check. So Enoch is going through a lot right now. And if I was in his shoes, I would be going through a lot, knowing that if I had a brother and my brother was serving in this war, knowing that my brother was not the type to back down from a challenge, but also knowing that my brother was not afraid to risk it all, I would have a hard time being able to, I would try to live my life to the fullest still, but right now, knowing that we haven't heard from him, it would be hard to juggle all of life's most important tasks on a daily basis. So Enoch is having a hard time sleeping, and this comes to show most likely so on the evening of September 30th, when he's at his uncle Reverend Joseph Strong's place. He's staying the night there. Enoch is having a very hard time sleeping due to the fact that his fears and worries over his brother's absence has led to great anxiety. You know, think about it, folks. The closest thing that Enoch could probably get to seeing a psychiatrist or a therapist may be his uncle, being a minister whom not only preaches sermons, but obviously is there to comfort members of his congregation. So this is the closest thing that Enoch Hale can get to in terms of seeing a modern-day psychiatrist or perhaps a therapist. October the 1st of 1776, Enoch was still focusing on the news obtained from the day before. He's about to turn 23 years of age, so he's at least 2 years older than Nathan. And despite the circumstances that are going on in the midst of Nathan's absence, Enoch is supposed to get his first church for ministering to parishioners. I mean, that is exciting, since he studied not only did he just study theology, but he turned down a role in the greater war effort by becoming a minister. And he obviously had something, you know, lined up in terms of a church. But Enoch obviously knows that ministering to a congregation will always be there. The fate of my brother's absence, or the fate behind my brother's well-being, needs to take greater precedent over taking on the job of a church minister to a congregation, or I should say to a parish. If I was in Enoch's shoes here, then yes, yes, one day I would see to it with going about ministering to a congregation, but right now my greatest priority is trying to find out the truth behind what happened to my brother. When Enoch returned to Coventry on October 2nd, whom did he search for right away? Well, it turns out that it's another relative. His name was Elnathan Strong, Enoch's uncle and brother to Reverend Joseph Strong. Uncle Elnathan was in town visiting family. Enoch did get some information from his uncle Elnathan, but apparently the information he got wasn't accurate. So if it wasn't accurate, the best we can say is that it's circumstantial. You know, in other words, well, this is what I think happened, but I don't have any 100% proof of it. So the status of the soldiers, including the regiment's whereabouts, most likely in the case for Nathan Hale, his regiment's whereabouts at this point has become a little bit more uncertain, given that the war itself has progressed onward without no ending in clear sight. So, yes, it is fair to say on one hand that the regiment Nathan was a part of, it's still in New York, but the thing is, whereabouts is it in New York? For all we know, the regiment could have been somewhere just before Nathan died, and now all of a sudden they could be somewhere else. So I'm going to throw up this number here to you all, and I know this might seem a bit odd to throw out a number here, but there's a reason for it. 5. That represents the total number of sons of Deacon Richard Hales whom left the farm to join the greater war effort. That means, folks, you know, we learned that there were 7 boys and 3 girls, I want to say. Nathan would have been one of 6 whom went off. Enoch, folks, is the only son whom has remained in the current household. And by doing so, he's probably doing his father, Deacon Richard Hale, a favor. Not just a favor, but perhaps a huge favor. You know, Deacon Richard Hale is probably at this point, he's got to be somewhere, I'm going to assume, maybe just close to 50 years old. I'm just going to give this out as a guess. Or maybe over 50 years of age. But again, it's a guess. I think it's fair to say that if anybody has the strength to perform the search of a missing relative, it's going to be Enoch. Yes, Deacon Hale is very deeply concerned about the absence or the whereabouts of his son Nathan, but do you think Deacon Richard Hale could do this mission alone? No. He would need to have help, and that is from Enoch. But I think it's fair to say that a younger person within the Hale family household should be the one conducting the search and providing as much up-to-date information as he can possible to the rest of the family. And that person should be none other than Enoch. Where did Enoch journey to in search of better information? All right, you know, Enoch is very determined and he's not giving up, but just when one door closes, or when one door in which he comes upon doesn't provide him enough accurate information, he continues to find the next available door that will open up with necessary information, and maybe not just necessary, but perhaps vital information that, you know, vital being that the one or two clues he really needs to be able to narrow down the search to where getting the ultimate truth may be just a few days away versus months away. So Enoch Hale ventures 20 miles north of East Windsor, Connecticut into Granville, Massachusetts, being in western Massachusetts. And he goes there to meet with a fellow named Lyman, who just happens to be a friend of the Hale family. Some historians believe that Lyman attended Yale College with Nathan and Enoch. Lyman had recently returned from New York. So Lyman, folks, had partaken in the New York battle campaign. Enoch is firmly convinced that Lyman would be the person whom either saw Nathan prior to his leaving for Long Island or got news from soldiers within Nathan's unit. Now, we know that on September 30th, Nathan went to Reverend Joseph Strong's house in Salmon Brook. We know that he returned to Coventry on October 2nd. Well, it won't be until 2 weeks after the 2nd, come October 16th, that Enoch arrives to Lyman's home in Granville. There is some good news to report. He did receive relevant news information from Lyman. However, the news that Enoch received from Lyman wasn't what he was hoping for. Lyman read the letter that Lyman got. He read it to Enoch. It mentioned visiting New York, including reports of Nathan's travels around mid-September to Stamford, Connecticut. Stamford, folks, Stamford, don't get it confused with the Stanford University out in Palo Alto, California. But yes, this letter that Lyman is reading to Enoch includes reports of Nathan's travels mid-September to Stamford, Connecticut, along with crossing over the Long Island Sound via merchant ship. The soldiers along the front lines confirmed Nathan meeting spy objectives. In other words, Nathan's going undercover. But before returning to the vessel Schuyler, he was betrayed, captured, and executed. This is what Lyman is telling Nathan here. I can't imagine being Lyman in his shoes and reading this information to Enoch, but, you know, somebody's got to provide this information. I mean, Enoch does have a right to get to the bottom of this, but at the same time, I can only imagine what is going through Enoch's mind in hearing information that it's not just so much that it's unpleasant, but hearing information that sounds like that, hey, your brother, yes, for one, died, but he didn't die under the most pleasant of circumstances. Of course, as I've said earlier, yes, dying on a battlefield may not be pleasant, but if I had to choose between dying on the battlefield versus death by hanging, I'll take dying on the battlefield, but I've said it before, I'll say it again. If I was alive during the Revolutionary War and in the Continental Army, I would have had no control whatsoever as to how my fate could have ended. I could have either died on the battlefield, I could have been taken a prisoner of war, or worse, I could have been captured and hung as a spy. I mean, it's very unpleasant choices, but there again, none of those individuals back then got to control, under no circumstances did they have control over their fate. What they cared more than anything else about was making the ultimate sacrifices for their newly created country, being that of the United States, in the hopes that whatever freedoms they could attain not only were secured for their for the present generation, but also would be passed down to future generations, not only to cherish, but also to preserve and protect, and with those freedoms, and ensure that there would always be accountability. What was the worst bit of news that the Hale family could have received? I was really blown away by this when reading the book, but I also had to come to the realization that that families, just because one family was loyalty, it didn't mean, just because one family's loyalties were that towards being patriots, it didn't mean that one or two members of the extended family could have been loyalists. And the same goes for vice versa. So we should be reminded, per this question that I've just asked, that what was the worst bit of news that the Hale family could have received? If somebody asked me, I would say it has to do with loyalties from within the greater family. Historians aren't 100% sure, but those whom have studied Nathan Hale's story, there were historians even in the 19th century, folks, and not long after Nathan died, there were people whom were convinced, or whom speculated, I should say, that perhaps Nathan himself could have been betrayed by a family member whom turned him in. And so now we're beginning to wonder whom in their right mind within the Hale family would turn their relative in. Well, remember, folks, Nathan went to New Hampshire, to Portsmouth, and that's where he met with an uncle on his dad's side, whom was the one that persuaded him to go into teaching. As a matter of fact, this relative was a very well-respected teacher in the Portsmouth community. So by having met with the uncle, Nathan knew that he had found his niche, career niche, I should say. It wasn't the uncle that that historians believe turned Nathan in, but it was one of the uncle's sons being perhaps... Perhaps it might have been one of the uncle's sons, being that of Samuel Hale, whom historians are convinced did change loyalties, or perhaps was keeping a dark secret from the greater Hale family and claiming to be a patriot behind, claiming to be a patriot in front of other people, not just family, but friends, but behind closed doors, engaging in the exact opposite in terms of loyalty. So there is still speculation to this day that perhaps a family member could have, in fact, turned in Nathan. Of course, if that was told to Deacon Richard Hale, I'm sure that just hearing that alone could have sent him off the deep end. I think that that would have also applied to any other immediate Hale family member. Many farmers, merchants, including everyday citizens, did remain loyal to King George in England as the war spread from New England into New York. Rebels and Tories fought one another up close, including destroying each other's personal properties. Well, folks, I mean, yes, it's one thing to have a difference in loyalties, but it didn't mean that it was always confined to just the battlefield itself. Loyalties were evident when it came to people living in the same town, family members with the same last name, or were related to one another through marriage. People from within families ratted on one another. They ratted each other out. They, if it meant protection, people have been known to rat out one another for some very strange reasons. It doesn't make it right, but if it means wanting to stay alive and not be further harassed by the enemy, then sadly people are forced to do it. If it means wanting to be safe from further threats. Richard Hale did learn that from his son Enoch. Enoch did learn that it could have been that there was speculation that Samuel Hale, whom was Richard's nephew, could have possibly indeed betrayed the family as a whole by turning Nathan in. Richard Hale is simply left stunned about the news that Enoch reported, only to wonder if in fact a family betrayal had indeed taken place. How much more can the family endure, knowing so much uncertainty is in front of them, and what they're already dealing with uncertainty-wise? Did Enoch Hale did Enoch Hale consider riding into New York? It just so happens, folks, that he did consider riding into New York, and the only way he was able to, the only way this was able to have been done for Enoch was through Reverend Joseph Strong. Reverend Joseph Strong, folks, had gone into New York to tend to soldiers, not from an individual standpoint, but from within their regiments. So Richard was able, Uncle Joseph, rather, was able to establish a connection for Enoch to go into New York with a pass in his hand. Gosh, to think in today's time when we need to have passes to get, say, from point A to point B, usually I think of cross borders, most notably between the United States and Canada, from the United States into Canada, passes being, you know, passports. You know, when you go to the border, you know, they'll ask you, hey, you know, what are you here for? I remember when my wife and I were vacationing in Ohio last summer, we spent a day in Canada because where we stayed was near the Ohio-Michigan line, and we were about an hour at most from Canada. So when we left Canada, I do remember a Border Patrol agent asking us what we were doing in Canada. I told the gentleman that we were sightseeing and that we also went to a winery. And he asked us where we were from, and I remember him saying, did you drive X number of miles in one day just to come to a winery and to sightsee in Canada? And I said to him, no, sir, we are vacationing in northwest Ohio, about an hour from Canada, as part of a greater sightseeing trip, adventure. And he said in the end, understood. So the bottom line is that it's very easy in today's time to take for granted that when we're traveling to most places, especially from points A to B in the United States, that we don't have to worry about taking passes with us just to get from point A to point B. But in 18th century times, especially in a time of war, having a pass on your hand is important, because if you don't have a pass on you, then it's fair to say that regardless of which side detects you, they've got some very good reasons to believe that you might be a spy. So it's very important that we be reminded of how it was one thing to travel from point A to point B, but in a time of war, you needed to have some extra security on you. Yes, Nathan Hale had a pass in his hand, but sadly the problem is that Nathan gave himself away by wearing civilian clothes, not military clothes, folks. So, yes, Enoch Hale, with the pass in his hand, did go about riding into New York, given that everyone whom he had come into contact with shared a story behind what they thought happened to Nathan. So think about it. By the time you've been in Connecticut, you've been hearing so many stories about what others think happened to your brother. Yeah, you want to go into New York. You want to do it on the right conditions, but you want to go there. You need to find out for yourself, where can I go to get the bottom, where can I go to get to the bottom of all this so that I can get some closure, not just for the rest of my extended family, but for my brother. Mid-October of 1776 saw the Continental Army retreat to White Plains, just north of Westchester County, as a means of being one step ahead from the British Army, given how close the rebellion itself was in coming apart. If Continental forces made their way into Connecticut and New York State, Enoch knew the chances of locating Nathan's unit would be easier, okay, if Nathan's regiment goes into Connecticut, or, you know, is in New York State, one way or the other, I've got a better chance of getting the information I need. Whom filled in for Nathan while he was away on the secret mission? Colonel Charles Webb, who was a native of Stamford, Connecticut. Colonel Webb was known for keeping a detailed, thorough book, which entailed his own tasks in the midst of Washington's relocation strategy effort. The summer of 1776 saw Colonel Webb record on many instances of Nathan not present at meetings due to his being ill. September 20th, Colonel Webb was not aware of Nathan's status behind enemy lines. Gosh, he's really out of the loop. You know, how come Colonel Webb didn't ask? But at the same time, you know, I think it'd be fair to say that even Washington himself could have only told Colonel Webb but so much. I think probably the closest thing that General Washington, with the consent of Lieutenant Colonel Knowlton, Washington probably would have told Colonel Webb that Captain Nathan Hale was in fact on a secret mission, but as for where he was going, that was off limits, or was on a special mission. The number 13 represents the number of days after the time when Nathan first got taken prisoner by the enemy, in which his falling out appeared in Webb's journal book. Even Colonel Webb, he's been thrown a lot of stuff at him. He has no control over it, but just wondering, when is Nathan going to return? Not so much that he can take over, but when Nathan returns, will he be able to provide us all with that valuable information? Did Enoch enter into White Plains just after the morning of October 25th, 1776? Yes, he met up with his stepbrother, Joseph Adams, and one of his brothers, Richard Hale Jr. Enoch ventured onward to Rye Ponds, small village outside of White Plains, where he felt closer to getting much-needed answers. Despite the battle for White Plains soon getting underway, Enoch was surrounded by military action, or I should say movement, all around him. So he's in the thick of all this, folks. He's not even a soldier, but yet he's in the thick of it all. I just hope that he doesn't accidentally get shot by, say, friendly fire, or even worst case, say if the enemy were to launch an ambush attack. And here's Enoch in the middle of it all trying to get to the truth of what happened to his brother. If Enoch's not careful, he might get taken prisoner of war. Things happen, folks, but especially if you're not vigilant enough with your surroundings. What ensued come October 28th, knowing Enoch wasn't too far away? The Battle of White Plains. Washington's forces prior to October 28th had already retreated north of New York City in an attempt to prevent General Howe's troops from cutting off the Continental Army's escape route. Despite the best efforts by Washington and his inner circle of officers, Howe's forces drove out the Continentals from White Plains, resulting in Washington's troops retreating further north. Prior to October 28th, just days earlier, whom on the British side was patrolling the greater White Plains area, including having sent scouts to evaluate before an official march began? None other than Robert Rogers, the man whom captured Enoch's brother. Well, when Enoch first arrived to White Plains, to me, folks, this is a stroke of luck. It might even be an act of God that in a situation where God is looking over Enoch. When Enoch first arrived to White Plains, he had broken part of his crupper. That's spelled C-R-U-P-P-E-R. Some might say crupper or crupper. I'm going to say crupper. What is a crupper? I didn't know anything about what a crupper was until I read the book, but a crupper, it pertains to equipment for riding a horse. A crupper is a strap that holds the saddle down. Okay, so for Enoch, when he arrived to White Plains, given that part of his crupper, or part of the saddle had broken off, unfortunately, he lost the other half of the device along his journey. To me, he's really up a creek now, because without the crupper, how's he going to be able to ride smoothly on the horse? It's going to be very uncomfortable, and perhaps the chances of his getting thrown off from the horse, or I should say thrown overboard off the horse, probably would be a lot higher. Well, there is good news in the form of, say, God looking after Enoch here, and that Enoch did manage to find a stable master. And what do you know? The stable master, without questioning Enoch, without even questioning Enoch's loyalties or why he was in the area, the stable master was kind enough to go out of his way to provide Enoch with a new crupper. Just before trying to reach Colonel Webb's camp, Enoch became suddenly concerned. Concerned about what? Well, it turns out that Enoch hears people's voices from a distance. He hears movement from a distance. He hears something that makes him uncomfortable. Makes him uncomfortable to the point where he even is beginning to wonder if he has any business being in the area, because if he doesn't, he needs to make a split decision move to get out of the area as soon as possible before something happens to him that will put his, that could perhaps put his life in grave danger. Well, Enoch was smart enough to turn his horse around and go back towards Greenwich. Little did Enoch know that Robert Rogers and scouts below him were nearby. Enoch's split decision on the spur of the moment to return to Greenwich not only was a smart move, but perhaps a life-saving matter or a life-saving choice. Had Enoch not turned around at that split second, folks, and made his way back to Greenwich, I believe it's fair to say that Enoch would have been captured by one of Robert Rogers' scouts. I can't imagine Robert Rogers getting his hand on another Hale family member, not just on an innocent civilian, but for, say, this family, for this individual to say, "Oh, my name's Enoch Hale," only for Robert Rogers' jaw to drop and say, "By any chance, do you have a brother named Nathan, whom we executed just not too terribly long ago?" Can't imagine being in that situation if, in fact, it happened, but thank heavens Enoch made the right decision at the right time to go in the opposite direction back to Greenwich. The morning of October 26th saw Enoch make it safely into White Plains, where he made it into Colonel Webb's camp. One of Nathan's men told Enoch that he went from Stamford and crossed the Sound over to Long Island. Enoch is now left to wonder why Nathan traveled behind enemy lines in the midst of battling the flu. It's probably fair to say that there were soldiers within Nathan's regiment who knew that Nathan wasn't feeling well. So, yes, Enoch is just totally left to wonder why his brother traveled behind enemy lines in the midst of battling flu on top of Long Island, on top of venturing into Long Island, knowing that Long Island was heavily dominated by British and Hessian forces. Well, at the same time, we do have to remember that we don't always get to control how we wish to feel when we're going into a top secret mission, but for Nathan Hale, he wasn't about to turn down a challenge, even if he wasn't feeling his best. But, you know, somebody had to come forward and partake in this mission. And even if it had been someone else whom had partaken in this mission, I have no doubts that that other member of Knowlton's Rangers would have probably said something that bore resemblance to what Nathan said. I regret that I only have but one life to lose for my country. Well, that wraps it up for this podcast segment episode, folks. When I'm on the air again next, we're going to learn more about how the search itself officially comes to an end. In other words, Enoch Hale, he's made some great strides with his search for the truth, but he still hasn't gotten that final confirmation that he needs. Even in the event he does get the final confirmation that he needs, he still has other unfinished business. And that's what we will find more about when I'm on the air again next time with you guys. Thank you for your time as always, and wherever you may live in the world, continue to stay safe. Take care.